Whoops. No, wait. Oh no. I'm just looking for it. Oh no. Wait a minute. Wait a minute. I'm gonna move this around here. Oh wait, there we go. Alrighty then. Got it. Okay, team. So here we are. Dark of the moon, dark of the moon, new moon on Friday. It's about planting our garden and we're emerging. Jupiter just entered Taurus, many things to do. And our adorable teammate Elizabeth, right, has been doing noble work that we want to support in North Carolina, and we have plans for that. And because right now at this moment, the Republican supermajority were sucking the chi out of the super part. All they need is one decent person to change their mind. Right, exactly. But we are calm because the magic will prevail no matter what it looks like, right? And so here, really in honor of you and your weaving, your Artemisia magical thing that maybe you'll tell us about, we go full support and plants from North Carolina that Sean will introduce. But here's Pete Seeger for all of us. God bless the grass. Here we go.
God bless the grass that grows through the crack. They roll the concrete over it to try to keep it back. The concrete gets tired of what it has to do. It breaks and it buckles and the grass grows through. God bless the grass. God bless the truth that fights towards the sun. They roll the lies over it and think that it is done. It moves through the ground, it reaches for the air, and after a while it's growing everywhere. And God bless the grass. God bless the grass that grows through cement. Green and it's tender, it's easily bent. But after a while, it lifts up its head. For the grass is living and the stone is dead. And God bless the grass. God bless the grass that's gentle and low. The roots, they are deep and the will is to grow. And God bless the truth, the friend of the poor, and the wild grass growing at the poor man's door. God bless the grass.
Ah, so that is especially for you, Elizabeth, and the Elizabeth part of all of us, and the North Carolina part of all of us. Do you want to just say about your Artemisia magic thing that you wove? You can unmute yourself. Oh, so, yeah, there we go.
Yeah, I just wanted to stay in that positive frame of mind and not get caught up in all the panic that I've been hearing from everybody here. And so I just had this journey that I did, and I wanted to see something filled with light. And so I got the image of using a diamond shield. And then I was, when we talked last week and Sean mentioned the Artemisia being sacred to the moon and women, I said, oh, let's add some mist. So I did another journey and tried to combine the Artemisia and the diamond shield. And I just put it around all the people, especially the women in the state, but also around the veto, and then just tried to put in light in the heart of all the senators and I mean House representatives who are considering the veto tonight. Just it's tonight they're voting on it, and they might be voting on it just even as we speak. So I'm just putting in light and love into their hearts that they might care for the people that they're representing with good government. So that's what I'm doing.
That's beautiful.
Anyone else want to join in? It's great.
No, that's beautiful. That we all want to choose things and dedicate to things of manifest incarnational value in our personal and community lives, right? So this is one, and it is right now. So we experiment. What can we do? And the panic is important because strife and panic feed the dementors, right? The cunning man. And it's like, ooh, to be calm. The part of Dion Fortune, we'll bring up the animism in 1940, last time Jupiter and Uranus were both in Taurus and many things. But backstage just now is saying there was Dion Fortune doing her wondrous work. But I said, but she wasn't really an animist, was she? And you, Sean, said no, it was the spirit of the govern early, of the country.
Right. Yeah. She was waking the spirit of the nation.
Right.
Rather than waking the spirit of the land. Although right. With all the attention on Glastonbury Tour, there were still enough spirits getting attention to be awakened in that way.
Yes. I've had amazing experience on Glastonbury Tour, these powerful places, which is also reminds us with all this Taurus, you know, I returned to places I hadn't been to in the woods that were powerful to me, you know, and you know, and whatever, if you're urban, just there's a tree, there's a something, you know. But I do bring up she was, you know, as many of us know, hired by the British government last time Jupiter and Uranus were in Taurus. The British government, because they're quirky that way, hired Dion Fortune to gather all the ritualists in Britain to do ritual magic to protect Britain from the Nazi invasion. And I think it worked. I think it worked. I think what we're up to and tapping into is the necessary additional factor. You know, as I said, the gods are willing to do 50%, but not 51%. It's the Saturn work that we do. And then the gods go, oh, we'll make that happen. But she did say, it was essential to our work that we maintain an atmosphere of tranquility in our councils. And she's writing as the bombs are falling, like really, like right next to her. And she said, otherwise, how could we have been a nucleus of stability for the nation's soul, right? And we just translate that into our greater freedom now, you know. How else could we have been, you know, an agent for nature's soul to maintain an atmosphere of tranquility? And she said part of how we did that, and here comes our Saturn Pisces, was our absolute dedication to the desirable outcome, no matter what, right? Bombs are falling, everything, and they're like, no, steady, steady. So in the case of North Carolina, right, which you know so deeply, but it's a very mean, bad, and I love Governor Roy Cooper, right, who really did a ritual, right? I mean, he showed up and he did a ritual. He in front of everybody, he goes, veto, like a wizard, right? So we want to open the portals. We have all these quintiles to open the portals for people to unfurl into all of their ritual magic, tap into nature selves. And, you know, and we have many plants who are eager to help. And we'll talk about, you know, our own quirky journey to get here. Everybody, and maybe, but Sean and me for sure, are going, well, it's been foggy. And then you were saying, Sean, that Solomon Seal wants to speak, and you go, oh, and Black Cohosh, they're from North Carolina. Do you want to introduce these allies?
Absolutely. So Black Cohosh to me is such a profound medicine, and she is a plant who has saved my life more than once when I've been in the darkest nights of the soul. And so Black Cohosh, which is native to Appalachia, has a deep, gnarled, twisted root that grows up into a spray of white star-like flowers.
Ooh.
And to me, Black Cohosh is the plant that I turn to when someone has fallen down to the bottom of the well, and they're so deep down that they can't see the sun at noon. And Black Cohosh makes the stars shine brighter, so they remember the starlight as they emerge. And so they remember the starlight that is locked away in those deep, dark, hidden places waiting to reawaken. Black Cohosh also works with the cerebral spinal fluid, which is so much a fluid of the transmission of our consciousness. And this was something I learned from Matthew Wood, who also points out that the cerebral spinal fluid, when you put it in a test tube and hold it up to light, looks like it's full of shimmering stars.
Ooh.
And it is the fluid that bathes our brain. And we're learning now that it's what helps to flush the old neurotransmitters out of our brains. And so when we've accumulated too much past experience, and this is especially true for people who are very sensitive to others' experience, when we've accumulated too much and are sort of stuck in the sludge of old thoughts and feelings that are stagnating, then Black Cohosh gets the cerebral spinal fluid moving in order to help to clear that and allow the way for new experience to come through.
That's great. You know, and it's like, because all of us, this is the beginning team, this dark of the moon, Jupiter just entering Taurus, so many things that we want to honor, of planting our garden, right? So I'm writing this down, you know, going, okay, Black Cohosh definitely goes in my garden. That's wonderful. And then you said also Solomon Seal, also from North Carolina.
Yes. So you were speaking of this degree of Jupiter and Taurus being connected with the clear flowing stream.
Yeah.
And to me, Solomon Seal is the great replenisher of the waters of the body. The sweet mucilaginous root that helps to restore fluidity to all of our being, and especially to restore fluidity to our fascia, lest we get stuck in the rigidity of fascism.
Yes.
It helps us to bring that synovial fluid flowing back through our fascia so we can feel ourselves and feel each other and move fluidly in the world.
And
it's interesting, Solomon Seal is also a medicine of navigating big change. It has a 90 degree root, and those plants that have 90 degree roots are plants for times when we're making a 90 degree change. But I think we spoke last week of Devil's Club and the kind of explosive change and then helping you live through the disruption. The Solomon Seal's way of working with change is much more fluid. It creates the lubrication to allow you to get through those turns and to be the river that carries you through the change.
Right. And is it just over here, marshmallow root is kinned in some way? It's a mucilaginous, it's a savior thing. Do you want to say about marshmallow root?
Yeah. So marshmallow root is much more, in my experience, about restoring the fluidity to the mucosa. But that is tremendously important because our mucus exists in the places where we're coming into contact with the outside world and helps us to have the right buffer between the inner and the outer and have protection and also to soothe the irritation that comes in from the outside world. And one of the wonderful things about marshmallow root is, I work with it a lot around the lungs, although also a fair degree around the digestion. But when I'm working with marshmallow root around the lungs, it's so interesting because if the lungs are too dry, it will help to bring the secretion of the mucus to lubricate them. But if there's a lot of stagnant, damp, swampy stuff in the lungs, It will also help because then it secretes the new fresh mucus underneath that old stagnant mucus that makes it easier to then call in other plants to help loosen and move it.
And I have to speak on its behalf as just an amazing ally. And somebody just gave me some fresh roots because I'm like, oh. So when I was in medical underworld and did 5 weeks of radiation, 5 days a week, and I was like, really? You know, with chemo at the beginning and the end, plus, you know, cannabis and helpful things, you know, but I went to the beach and I'm like, oh man, my entire digestive system is just fried. And somebody gave me some marshmallow root and like immediately it was like, oh, this is amazing. This is miraculous. This is so wonderful. It's such a huge change. And I tried to tell the doctors who are dealing with people, they're like, mm-hmm. yeah, they're not zero interest. I'm like, you could really help people. And and that will be, you know, pertinent retroactively sending to a friend of mine who just died of what I survived. And it's like, whoa. But yeah, so anyway, so Elizabeth, you have Black Cohosh backing you up and Solomon Seal to the North Carolina part of ourselves going, no matter what. And again, atmosphere of tranquility, no matter what. Magic's a willingness to work with everything. So whatever comes down, we have our preferences, but in a fluid directing it kind of way with the plants and go, it'll turn out fine, right? In the fullness of time. And you, Sean brought up Solomon Seal and Black Cohosh because I said, here's wormwood. Because in my wonderful organic semi-Amish farmers, you get to order every 2 weeks. And it's like, wormwood? Okay, I'll make friends with that. So when we were just backstage now, I'm going, wormwood. And you know, Aaron was saying just being with it is kind of trippy. And it's like, all right, that's great. And then I took a tiny little bite. I'm going to take another tiny little bite too, but do you want to introduce us to wormwood since it's very happy to be here?
Hello. Absolutely. Hello, yeah. Everybody. So wormwood is another one of our Artemisias. It's interesting thinking about Artemisias earlier, but also speaking about panic earlier. There were two gods who were not worshipped within the walls of the city, Pan and Artemis. And I always find that a good way of dealing with panic is to reach out to Pan and try to find out what is the wild spark that's trying to be animated and where is the resistance against it and how is that resistance creating the fear. But then Artemis is the exiled feminine, the wild feminine, and sometimes comes to me and says, don't stop talking about the wild feminine. My gender is wild. And wormwood in particular is the most fiery of the Artemisias. And so wormwood is like Artemis herself, an ally of the poor and the exiled. But wormwood also being that spark of fire, the beneficent Mars that Culpepper spoke of, that relights the fire of the soul and the fire of perception and the fire of digestion. I learned from Matthew Wood that when someone is profoundly, profoundly depressed, you can give them one drop of wormwood tincture a week, because that one drop will reawaken their spirit. But at that point, they're not yet necessarily ready to deal with all the things that brought them into the underworld. And so you give them that one. So if you give more or give it more frequently, you can overactivate that. So I, based on that, I will give the person one drop of wormwood a week and then give them Angelica or Albizia or Damiana to brighten their spirit in between.
That's great. Yeah, not because I feel a kinship already. I'm glad I ordered it. Right, the Damiana. And then you also said that wormwood has a hedge quality.
Yes, well, all of the artemisias are plants of the hedgerow. And so the plants of the hedgerow, and also the trees of the hedgerow, like blackthorn and hawthorn, are very much at are very much plants of the boundaries. They're the boundary between the wild and the cultivated, and they're also the boundary between this world and the other world. And with the artemisias, I find that across the board, if you are too much in this world, they will help to open you to remembering the other world. But if you are too much away from this world, their bitterness and their fire will bring you back into your body in this world.
Yeah, so already we're getting, multiple planets cahooting, and of course it, in any two systems, right? There's not an exact correlation, because otherwise, why would we need two systems? So, but the nuance is wonderful. So we have the quality of artemisia wormwood as a hedge is a Saturn quality, right? And it's deep down kind of quality. And then what you said also is super timely. So Jupiter has just this afternoon entered Taurus, and who should be the greeting party but Pluto and Aquarius, right? Going, hi there. So they're squared exactly now. And one way I work with Jupiter, we all have, is Jupiter says, I will make you very wealthy. By your definition of wealth, hand it back to Saturn, define wealth. But I'm also going to make everything bigger. All the stories and all the repetitive stories of your life, I'm going to make them bigger unless you toss them into Pluto's cauldron. So whatever you don't want to take across this hedgerow into this next new cycle of life that we're sort of planting the seeds now, but it's really also on Friday, new moon, where everything blooms. Everything, right? It's kind of what you were saying, the good, the bad, the ugly. So Jupiter and Pluto in cahoots, it's a part of the Pluto initiation. So any repetitive impediment pattern in our own lives, which some of us may be quite familiar with, right? I mean, that's part of the kind of dedication of our gathering. It's like, oh, let's everything that people need to deal with come up here. There we go. There. And it's like, right. And then for everybody just to think of something that with which one is really done. And we experiment with how can we draw upon, the experiment of our council just to amplify and help and support each other in what we want to toss into the cauldron personally and collectively, right? Because I did love, our backstage, not often texts, Sean, because since our last meeting, part of me was like, right, I want to communicate with the team and remind us all to, what is our dedication? It's like, oh, but I can't do it for some reason. I no, surely tomorrow. No, today then apparently, right? But it was great because Sean and I was like, I feel very foggy, and I'll get to the pre-grieving thought. But and you were also saying very foggy, stumbling over old impediments. I'm like, yes, that's right. We don't even need, we can't really even talk about it much. It's like, what do I? But it is before us all. So if anybody feels kinned with that, wonderful. And if you don't, then take over the class. I mean, that's been perfectly wonderful, right? So the stumbling over the old patterns, and then just for us to begin to really play and support and experiment, like, and people don't have to, like, I'm a big fan of no mandatory sharing, right? Especially in groups where it's like, turn to the person on your left and tell them your deepest secrets. I'm like, no, right? I always like that when there's mandatory sharing, and I just say to somebody, I go, I hate sharing and I don't process. They're like, me too. And I go, perfect, good to meet you. Goodbye. Right. Anyway, but so nobody has to share, but expressing in one's own journal or saying out loud, as is moved, we will as a team come up with the liberating metaphor that might be fun to work with, or even just general goodwill. So, and then just a little shout out, because the votes are happening in North Carolina, but also we're always expanding our repertoire of responses with plant and planet help. So we are undaunted, and like Dionne Fortune, bombs falling, she's like, no, it's the outcome that'll be fine. You know, to keep steady on that. It's a test, you know, and in that sense, you know, our dedication is whatever is truly best, let it come in. There's some great comeuppances happening. You know, CNN insisted on having the creepitudinous, you know, town hall with the former guy, right? And they're like, oh, but it's huge. They've lost like half of their viewership. And it's like, and in North Carolina, there are, you know, 200 businesses that have signed on to go, you're gonna crash the economy, you know, you're gonna destroy the state, you're gonna whatever the thing is. And so we go, God bless the grass. You know, it's just like that. It's gentle, it dissolves the concrete, it's with the truth, it's the power of democracy, it's the power of blessing. So yeah, and then just a little shout out to Governor Roy Cooper, the wizard part of himself, who has a Venus Jupiter quintile, right? And we just go, capacity to open portals between worlds. And we see your wizardry and your ritual as part of our team, an ethical member of government. Very excellent, you know, so supported and protected, right? We want to protect everybody, right? Do we wish Governor Roy Cooper a waft of wormwood, perhaps, for hedging?
Absolutely.
Hedging his bets?
Yes. And a bit of Devil's Club, too.
Oh, okay. That's right. That's good. And so just as we're jaunting, you know, merrily, life is but a dream as we row our boats, you know, it's just, I'm making notes, too. We're all in this thing together going, right, each of us in our garden. And it's like, all right, black cohosh for sure. Wormwood is visited, you know, a Solomon seal. I'm just writing down, you know, and then literally planting would be great. This is an incredible planting moon on Friday, you know, new moon in Taurus, exalted. It's like, ooh. So on every level, literal and metaphoric, like, what do we want to plant? Whatever we plant, and that's why we want to do the editing backstage now, whatever we plant is incredibly vital, and we'll bring in the music to help that, the music from the plants, all experimenting. But as we gather now, you know, the moon is 21 Aries, which is the gateway to the garden of all desired things. So it's like, we see that. And then I just wanted to, you know, cause I was in such a mysterious and clearly kinned with Sean, you know, we weren't communicating that much, going foggy, can barely function. Right. Catch you later. But anyway, we were in a related journey. And then I did yesterday hear that a wonderful friend of mine had died, and she's so Jupiter, I want to bring her up, and I thought, oh, there was some part of me that was pre-grieving that didn't know, but it did know. And I just want, and she amazing human, and I realized I hadn't heard from her since December. We to and fro, you know, email and Facebook sometimes, and come to each other's events. She was a true psychic. So I just want to bring her up. All right, I'm going to move around here. I'm going to share screen. And then I just want to wait a minute. No, don't do that. Okay, I'm bringing up, but no, stop. Okay, there we go. All right. So here's all of us now. Well, missing the bottom half, right? But you got the gist of it. So here's all of us now. Remember the astrological chart, just a stylized factual map. So here's the Earth. Here's me outside Washington, D.C. This is most of us on the East Coast. And this is where the planets are now. We can, you know, honor them. But we go, Jupiter has just entered Taurus. Mercury has just gone direct on Mother's Day. So our hands, our voice, Taurus is the throat and singing. The image for the sun today is serenading and singing, we'll play with this. But I wanted to bring up my friend Lynn. So what I've done now is put Lynn Demarais' chart in the middle and where all the planets are in the outer rim. And it's like, oh my goodness, right? Again, you know, we had, you know, wonderful Cornelia last week. It's not that you have to die, Cornelia, but it's a precise thing. It's a welcoming. And this is a person who was very, very Jupiter, and very gifted at journeying and journeying between worlds. So she's a Sagittarius. This is her actual birth time, you know, incarnational agent of Jupiter in its outward questing curiosity. And then she's what's called a double Pisces, Pisces rising, moon and Pisces, the other Jupiter, inward, 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 exactly square, third quarter of the moon. No, first quarter of the moon. That's it. There we go. There we go, Caroline. exact first quarter moon. But we do look and we go, ooh, Neptune, dreams, vision, imagination. And what I'd said to Cornelia, because it was exactly on her Mars, is what I would say to Lynn in this mystery, you know, big, big collective dream intelligence, Pisces, goes around every 165 years. You know, but it says to all of us in some form, but it says, you know, what that to which you are dedicated is increasingly welcome in the collective. And I just wanted to, you know, honor Lynn's dynamic in that way. And then Venus in Capricorn, super practical. So, and then she did talk to the dead. There's Chiron at 19 Scorpio in the eighth house at the accursed degree of the accursed sign. We have people with that degree. I love that degree. A woman draws back two dark curtains leading to a sacred pathway. And I was saying to backstage Badger Richard, who knew her as well, you know, she talked to the dead. I believe her. And I want to believe her, and I believe her. And Richard was saying, going to jump on the Ouija board soon. And it's like, if there was anybody who was going to come through, you know, I'm happy to join with you in that realm, Richard. So I just wanted to honor my friend. And then the mystery of, like, when I found out, like, a big colleague, a big adventurous, bravado, heretical body, irreverent, reverent, high-handed, you know, deeply cultivated person, you know, but it was like, oh, there'd been this deep, you know, wormwood now helps place. And it's sometimes we get to make sense retroactively of our interior state going, ooh, because when I heard it was like, boom, into very deep, you know, and I went, you know, and swam a mile for the first time. I broke through a resistance. I'm a much happier person when I swim a mile. And so I swam a mile, you know, kind of for Lynn, just entering into water. And it's like there was a deep, deep place and everything was put in perspective. So I just wanted to, you know, honor her. And if there's anything also that you want to chime in, Richard, you know, feel free or not. No mandatory sharing, you know, but so we go, all right, I will. And she gave me this beautiful purple cloak that she sent me for winter solstice 2019. I never wore it for what it was in the closet. I just got it out. It's a deep purple thing. There we go. It's like, well, we'll wrap the wormwood in it. But it's a poignant thing, you know, our dance, because she was sending me the cloak because I was just emerging from the daunting medical underworld, the very specifics of which is what would take her out later, you know, this year. And it's like, ooh, mysteries, but reciprocal blessing, all wonderful blessing to herself. Okay, so we goodbye for now. I'll be in touch. We'll warm up the Ouija board. All right, so there's that. And so stopping that particular share. But yeah, so the pre-grieving, and then you'd been mentioning also, Sean, because we were like foggy and the old things and then the place of grieving and even forethought of grief, you know, and I think, it, you know, Neptune says to all of us, you know, and, you know, whatever we feel, we're tapping into the whole collective realm, right? The whole, there's a lot of grief and anticipatory grief in the natural world as well. And it's like, ooh. And Lynn was a good friend to coyotes. Mm-hmm. I mean, literally. And that's part of our kinship. She has great photos of coyotes coming up to her incredible place in Big Sur. And also she was great at making money as a psychic. I'm like, that's important. That's a very impressive too. Yeah. So there's that, but also, Sean, you'd mentioned, Tulsi to clear fog.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, whenever we're in a foggy state, we want to bring heat, which is bringing the sun, and we want to bring what's aromatic, because what's aromatic is dispersing. So we're dispersing the fog and relighting the fire. And Tulsi does that so beautifully, gently. I feel like Tulsi doesn't force us out of the fog. Tulsi invites us to rise up and emerge from the fog. And just such a beautiful scent, such a beautiful taste. And a plant you can work with in so many ways. You know, tincture and smoking are my most frequent ways of working with Tulsi, but also a delicious tea and absolutely sublime preserved in honey. On a cold, dreary winter afternoon, there's nothing like a spoonful of Tulsi honey to bring the summer back into your being. And then one of my very favorite things with Tulsi is my friend Kenneth Profrock, mad scientist, druid, ex-pharmaceutical chemist turned archdruid and naturopath, does so many brilliant things in his practice. And one of them is that he gets these malas, these prayer beads, made of Tulsi seeds. And he'll give them to a client and tell them to wear the beads and to take the Tulsi into their body. And as they do that, to remember that in India, Tulsi is a plant that is planted in holy places. And that when you are bringing Tulsi into you and when you are wearing Tulsi, to remember that you are marking your own body as a holy place.
That's great. And then just to honor the, you know, not what's going to happen, what's available with which to cooperate. So there is so much. Let me just bring up the chart of now for fun. So we do want to, this powerful lineup here of so the moon is in Aries now. It just changed degrees. it was the gateway to the garden of all desired things a moment ago, 21 plus Aries. Now it's 22 Aries, which is a woman carrying a precious veiled burden into the future. We go, thank you. Okay. We're there. And the moon will be moving into Taurus there slowly coming up on its way to, in the dark of the moon, on its way to the new moon on Friday at whatever I said, 11, the thing is the moon, right, the new moon on Friday. Wait, I'm in the wrong week. Back to Mother's Day. Right, it will be at 8:53 a.m. West Coast time, 11:53. So the moon tomorrow, it's on its way, moving pretty fast, right? Changes sign every 2.5 days. So it'll be with Jupiter. If you got up early, you could see a great thing. And then it'll be Mercury voice expansiveness in voice. And then on its way, Vesta right now is at 14 Taurus, where it, which has a deep imprint because Uranus has stationed there so often, the whole summer of 2022, I think even 2021, and then the end of 2022 is at 14 Taurus. So there's Vesta now just reminding us, this is in the midst of a wild windstorm, a stranger walks into town wearing a silk top hat, carrying a larger back bag, the doctor, magician, cooperator with natural forces. And it's Vesta, which my friend Sylvia always says, where Vesta is where we are divested of orthodoxy, you know, and delayed or paused for a moment while we brew our Tulsi tea to light the hearth, to keep the hearth flame of community well-being going. So that's also part of our collective magic, the hearth flame of the North Carolina part of ourselves. And well, wherever we are assigned, right? And then the moon will come along and conjoin Uranus and then get married to the sun. We're in this Beltane courtship time, still remembering that we're on our way to the wedding of the summer solstice, but it's very beautiful. And that will be at 28 plus Taurus, whose image is a mature woman reawakens to a romance. And we go, okay, sure. It's a very upbeat new moon. And that could be the earth herself. We don't even know. A mature woman reawakens to romance, reawakening to life, feeling rejuvenated, recovering Eros. That would be great. Dropping earlier images of getting over disappointments, being at a more mature phase of an ongoing drama. We go, thank you. That's super great. And so it's the new moon. It's at 28, but also then changes into the next degree, which is two garrulous cobblers. So we have Eros put to the purpose of making shoes. I don't know. It's working things out. You know, finding the team. So we like that. And then, I did want to bring up Summer, our teammate Summer, as we begin to make our, invite our council to whatever, because I was looking at Summer Star's chart, and you said, and Summer, you had such a beautiful introduction of yourself, you know, I have it here somewhere, and I think we can send everybody's introductions, but you're so knowledgeable. And the reason I wanted to, and Summer, are you there? Somewhere we can unmute Summer.
Yep, I'm here.
Okay. Oh yeah, there you are. Well, it's very exciting, right? Because you have a Sun Mercury conjunction 18 Leo, so Uranus is humming that, right? But for our team, I particularly wanted to note, as Uranus crosses your Western, remember, this is an astrological chart, this is the Earth, the only thing different from more usual map is on the left is East, on the right is West. So Uranus is coming up on Summer's descendant, right? She's born with it in her first house, right? Intuitive, trickster, disobedient, heretical, creative, passionate, knowledgeable person, right? And so your whole life, right, Uranus has been journeying below the horizon in your chart. So these doorways, these portals, it's always considered a big, cool thing when an intelligence part of ourselves crosses, changes hemispheres, in this case, from below to above. You know, and Summer, you'd sort of said yes, and Uranus coming to oppose itself and everything, which will take a little while, but it's close. And then you'd said midlife crisis. I'm like, no, we're throwing that into the cauldron, right? Astrologers do call the Uranus opposition the midlife crisis, and it's why I find most, no, I'm going to get into trouble here. Much astrological writing, just annoying. Anyway, so we want to Uranus it, liberate it. Because it's true, it happens when we're 41, 42, you know, Uranus is an 84-year cycle. So at some point, you know, 41, 42, it is going to be opposite. But rather than contain it like, oh, a midlife crisis, which is kind of a dismissive term, right? It's just this wild, and Summer's Uranus is at a particularly active degree. Its image is, you know, drums and music through city streets, right? It's the degree that was rising when Occupy Wall Street started. So it's Scorpio. It's stealthy and intense. And look, you're a double Scorpio. You're Scorpio rising too. But it's pretty hummy. And so I like thinking of it as just, and see the sun's advancing on that already. And the new moon will be quite fun right there. We got on your Chiron too. It's, okay. But it's just the wild, unique part of yourself, ourselves, comes along and goes, are we living it? It's like, any answer is fine, you know, but are you feeling like you're getting ready to emerge into a whole participatory bigger thing?
Oh yeah, definitely. Actually, the image for my natal, the dancing in the street with drums. I used to live in India, and that was my favorite thing. I was like, I could never have a bad day. I lived there for about 4 years. Because I'd be riding a rickshaw on the way home, and you just turn a corner and there's people dancing in the street. And I was like, yeah, this is where I belong. My life is not as exciting as that now, but maybe, you know, it's getting ready to emerge.
Well, yeah. According to, I just wanted to bring it up because it's, and also, you know, so everybody I've been doing readings for lately has something at 20 degrees of Taurus. And it's like, oh, 20 degrees of Taurus is reporting in for duty, apparently, like it's coming alive, as is like our own councilmate Sam Baker with his moon at 22. Look, your Chiron is on Sam's moon. His moon is at 22 Taurus. And then he being born in 1966, which is the Uranus Pluto conjunction at between 20 and 24 Virgo. So Uranus is also trining the 1960s, right? And I think of that as a positive sleeper cell getting unlocked. I like thinking of Uranus's glyph as an ancient jail key, unlock yourself and pass it on. So for Sam, he's got a moon exalted in Taurus, trine Pluto Uranus of 1966, you know, and they're all coming alive, and I can play with that too. But yeah, and on your Chiron, that's super fun to give fresh, unique expression to these ancient things. But just in the toing and froing, you know. So what you brought up about the dancing in India and Occupy Wall Street, and we go right, and let's send that to Elizabeth in North Carolina. Dancing, music. Remember in South Africa, it was the incredibly powerful calling it in, drumming and dancing that gave everybody goosebumps and gave the tyrants goosebumps too, going, woo. It was an essential part of that. Yes, the chanting and the drumming, you know, and you know, again, you know, concerned citizens for more lively India and South Africa in global politics, rather than what do we want? Peace. When do we want it? Now. It's like, oh, it's so tedious. At least to change the language, you know, engaging some of Summer's fantastic intimate language craft. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. That's also because Uranus will trine your Venus. Exactly. At least we could do is, what are we creating? Peace. When are we creating it? Now. It's like, why fool around? You know, why, you know, and, you know, and it's also the same, like, no justice, no peace. I'm like, yeah, but it's not getting us anywhere. You know, justice, then peace, right? It's like, come on, team. So, yeah. So I just wanted to bring this up to honor your transition as you, as part of all of us, Summer Star, so much. And Jupiter-Uranus conjunction of 2024, see, because there, it's very exciting, really. Jupiter, you know, help is on the way. Jupiter, here we are, Jupiter, and it's going to be moving and getting closer to Uranus, their dance, which augurs, you know, it's available, what we are dedicated to, which is a huge biomimicry, participatory animism renaissance, ingenious solutions, you know, a culture of it's available, right? And part of being cultural, knowledgeable renaissance would be the Summer Star part of all of us too, and then making the fabulously quirky angle to Summer's Moon and Neptune and Sagittarius. I think the Moon's image is a modern Moses bringing down, you know, laws, and we get to change everything. Going laws, no, forget that. Guidelines, bringing down guidelines. And the image for your Neptune is the crown and torch of the Statue of Liberty, the necessity to defend democracy from tyranny. Yes, thank you. There we go. And another great teammate with Mars and Cancer. Clearly a great thing, you know, right? We're cast off any of astrology's old fogey, like, oh, and we go, no, we love it. And look, Venus is about to marry your Mars. It's so exciting. All right, well, we'll leave this for the moment. But I think it's just, you know, wonderful that you're here, Summer Star. And anything, well, do you want to say anything about what you wrote in your intro about, you know, I have it somewhere, but you said it so beautifully about what you're dedicated to and making kin.
Yeah, well, it's interesting, you know, a lot of what I do is through the relational field, and I've actually been doing a lot more ecstatic dance embodiment things within community. So that, you know, the drums and the, but a lot of my work is through the relational field with other than human. So nature spirits, ancestors, deep work there. But I also work within, I think in my intro, I said I was a mental health mage because I work a lot within those sort of murky areas of what is ecstatic and, you know, psychic phenomenon and what is mental health phenomenon and where do those kind of blend. So I work with people who hear voices and things like that. So kind of stretching where we think about in terms of our perceptions of reality, the seen and unseen, and the fluidity of that. So, yeah.
That's great. And of course, going to your fantastic Virgo, the etymology of ecstatic is ecstasis, to stand outside. Which I really like, because when people would say, again, it's sort of like Chiron's mystery school, you know, to be rejected by orthodoxy is an advantage. But when people, and the progressive community is full of this, people complaining about, you know, that group won't let me in, those people, don't, it's like, that's because you have an ecstatic relationship to that group, right? You're standing outside it, ecstasis. And it's like, oh, it's pretty cool. There we go. And then just to bless you, the you part of all of us, Summer, we have with the moon and everybody here, a grand trine in fire. There we go. Chiron. Oh, it's exact. How exciting. Look, Chiron at 18 Aries, which is a magic carpet hovering over drab city streets, trining your sun and Mercury, which is a houseboat party, Dionysian abandonment, with the moon and Neptune. We go, that's excellent. And grounded too. Oh, look, your Pluto is my sun and Neptune. So you're my Pluto transit in 1981, Pluto, there we go. Anyway, that's fun. All right, more fun later. All right, that's great. Thank you for being here. All right, we'll do that. Okay, there we go. Right. And then I thought, as an offering, you know, Mercury and Taurus going forward now. I feel like we can talk now. Right? It was so deep and inward, you know, because it's true. You know, my own, you know, befoiblement that I want to toss into the cauldron. I was like, yes, I will write the team right after our last thing. Oh no, I don't. Oh no, I don't. And then it's like, am I being delinquent? What if they're whatever? And it's like, no, stop all that, Caroline. Stop all that. Just like, there we go, and the path opens. So the unfurling, and then of course I forgot the next thing I was about to say. So Mercury forward, I'm like, yeah, there's something to this astrology thing. And I also saw that Mars is moving up, crossing my descendant. And it's like, right now. And so it's like, oh, there is something to this No, don't Adobe Flash Player. Don't do that. Okay, sorry. It's when you get these automatic things. Mm. No, don't do it. Don't, sorry. Okay, there we go. Okay, there we go. So it's like, there is something to this thing. You know, again, we're sifting through, but it's like, right. I think in retrospect, for having compassion for ourselves, going, no, that makes sense, right? There we go. I feel like emerging, and not to outsource our Saturn, right, by imagining that other people are grumpy, which they might be or might not be, but it shouldn't affect our own dedication. So there's that dynamic. But then where I wanted to kind of to and fro a little bit, Sean and everybody, is, so Taurus is the throat, you know, it is the whole realm of singing, you know, and I thought we might play with the music of the plants. And we have some fun excerpts. And at first I didn't think it was real, but I think we're gonna play the music that cannabis makes when it's wired up. And a little bit, we have three little things to play about wiring plants up to make music. And at first I was like, oh, I don't know. I mean, is it just, but I do remember a scientist once taking DNA as musical notes and setting it to music. And the DNA for cancer cells was very like Brahms Requiem, like, and the DNA for the DNA for the membrane of a mouse eye was like Mozart. Mm-hmm. Right? It's like, oh, how interesting. And the many ways we're opening these portals in which many things can speak to us. And it was my colleague, Stephen Kent, great world musician, and his beautiful partner, Eva. And they were talking about when they went to Damanhur, which is a quirky, interesting place. There's, they are great musicians, and they were told, like, go jam with the trees. And they thought they were being dismissively, you know, dismissed, right? And then they went to the trees and they were like, oh no, this is actually quite real. The trees were the, anyway, so Richard, as you can line it up, let's go for the first one, which is the sound that cannabis would make. Maybe. Do you have it lined up? Yes. Maybe. The next clip will show how they do that. And the third little clip is an actual scientific grown-up showing how they do that. So, but it's, we'll go to the, I forgot, I have the playlist somewhere, Richard, but I think the next one is also Damanhur. which again is a very, very trippy community. It's built underground. It's in Italy, groovy people. It's like FinTorn, but underground, but with more rules, I think, possibly. But they're doing all these and a very strange, you know, cosmology of Egypto indigenous. Anyway, but they're doing this. Do we have the next? Oh, yeah, we do. Thank you.
We are going to listen to this vine sing right now. Let's hear it play some music. I really enjoy listening to philodendron and snake plants. Any plant that inspires me along the way on a hike with a beautiful view. Let's tune into the sounds played by this plant. We just attach two sensors to a plant's leaves, and PlantWave detects these slight variations that are happening in plants based on them moving water around. We graph those variations as a wave, translate them into pitch, and then run those pitch messages through instruments that we design. So the result is this continuous stream of pleasing music that gives us all this sonic window into the secret life of plants. As many of you have been asking, what would a redwood tree sound like? Let's see what melodies it creates when we connect the plant wave. If a plant is really underwatered, you know, it might play just a few notes, whereas if a plant is really healthy and thriving, it will be going through like the whole range. Looks like we have a plant here that may not have made it through this heat. So let's check it out. Let's see if it can make any music. Yeah, nothing. Let's see what happens when I water the plant. Let's listen. Every plant is different and every leaf is different. So here we are listening to this rubber tree. And now let's check out this pothos. PlantWave actually works with mushrooms as well. So let's check it out. Most of the time with mushrooms though, you know, the mushrooms are growing out of a dead plant. And so you're actually hearing the connection between two mushrooms through a dead plant. The development of PlantWave started back in 2011 when I started a record label called Data Garden. And it was a zero waste record label. And my friends and I got together and started to think about like how we could express this connection to nature with music. And we became really interested in like biofeedback music. I have an awesome engineer friend who built the hardware that ended up becoming PlantWave. And I designed a generative music algorithm that takes all of this data from the plants and actually makes it into this beautiful, listenable, harmonious music. Okay, I'm testing one of these new prototypes, and I'm testing this 8-inch MIDI connector here, which is cool. We had four different plants, and each plant was playing a different instrument. Thousands of people came through this space and were able to just chill out listening to plants. And I was really amazed by people's response. It's acting as a bridge for people from their phones back into nature, and helping people have a deeper relationship with their plants.
Okay. So do you have any thoughts or responses, Sean?
Yeah. So I think first of all that it really helps to decenter our human ideas of music and our human ideas of language, that we have this idea that we are this species that invented these things. I should say, in this culture, at this time, we do. That's not certainly not always been true. And I think about the old Irish phrases about Ceil mac tíre, the music of the son of the earth, which is the singing of the wolf. And I think about the singing of the wolf.
Yeah.
And I think about how many cultures in our history have known that other beings are taking part in singing the world into existence. But that, of course, when we transcribe the way that vibration is happening in a plant body, our body will experience it as musical. And I think about, I think it was last summer, that they came out with the study that was a fascinating Rorschach test in a way, about how listening to the signals along the mycorrhizal network, they discovered that the signals being carried by the mycelial filaments were pulsing in ways that resembled the syntax of human language. And I remember there were a lot of people who wanted to be too clever by half and come up with all their reasons from human linguistics about why, no, that's not really language, you silly people, you're just writing headlines. But of course, our communication arose from other communication. And I remember in one of our correspondences at the end of his life, writing to Stephen Buhner about that and asking him what he thought about it. And he said, oh, well, finally, they're kind of catching up a little bit.
Right.
But that, yes, all there is rhythm and melody in everything. And we learned it from the rest of life, just like we learn language from the rest of life. And of course, language and music are only recently different. And once upon a time, even the law was a song.
Once upon a time, you were what?
Even the law was a song.
Oh, right. And I do just remember, I might have said this to everybody before, but you know, in a cab to the airport on my way to Bioneers some years past, and you know, a cab driver and I think he was from Ethiopia, and like the world's in terrible shape, and I go, yeah, but I'm going to listen and participate with people who have ingenious solutions about cooperating with nature. And my buddy Paul Stamets is doing a lot on mushrooms. And he goes, you know, I've never told a white person this before. But we have these songs in Ethiopia that we sing. And when we sing them, the mushrooms come up. Thank you. Thank you. Yes, all of this song, music, plant, lore, and mercury voice in Taurus now. And just thinking about it, we're planting our garden, literal, metaphoric, both is even more wonderful. You know, and I love the one of the solution people from observing is called Sonic Bloom. And it was Midwestern farmers traveling in South America, and they noticed in the Amazon, may it be preserved, right, that the dawn chorus of birds caused the leaves to all open, and then they would absorb the fog rolling in from the sea. And so when they went back to the Midwest, most of their birds were dead, but they played a chorus of birdsong at dawn while they sprayed a Rudolf Steiner, you know, a seaweed mist over the plants, right? And yeah. And the apparently the plants just went wild with vitality.
I'm remembering now being in Cochabamba in Bolivia and meeting with people who had been part of the struggle to bring water back into the hands of the people after the water privatization. And a friend of mine there interviewed some factory workers who had been involved in that, who had been involved in that movement to protect the water. And she asked them why they risked their lives to protect the water. And they said, we wake up at 5 a.m. every day to walk to the factory. And on the road to the factory, there used to be a stream, and where the stream flowed, there were trees. And there were birds singing in the trees, accompanying us each morning on our walk to work. And when the companies came in and started taking the water, the stream dried up and the bird song was gone. And so we were standing up for the right to have bird song in our morning.
And for all of us, you know, to feel, to relax into no human is watching or listening necessarily, but to singing to our, well, to everything really, you know, good morning, to sing to the plants, to sing to the plants as planting them, to and call and response, what song would you like, you know? Well, let's play. I can't even remember what it is, Richard, but let's play the last little clip about where it's the possibly. Well, I love what you said, Sean, that it is all plausible, but it's a scientist introducing the plants, making their music. So here's our last clip of that.
Now we get to cottonwood trees. Trees also sing. We're recording bats, and we had a little bat detector with us, and the bat detector is not much bigger than this. And what usually happens is bats send out these pings of echolocation to try to locate insects and other things that they're trying to eat, part of their diet. And we were holding this in our hand, listening for these little brown bats we're recording in Utah. And as we got closer to this tree, we didn't hear a ping, but we heard a constant signal, which is very unusual because we didn't know bats did that, except that when we got close to this cottonwood tree, the signal got stronger, so we figured it was coming from the trunk of the tree. Well, what was happening? Well, we drilled a little tiny hole and inserted a hydrophone, a tiny instrumentation hydrophone into the trunk, and recorded the 70 kilohertz sound, which is 2.5 octaves beyond what humans can hear. When I got back to the studio, I slowed it up by a factor of 7, and this is what I got. Now, dang if that ain't weird. Now, what's happening here? Well, what we think is happening is the cells in the xylem and the phloem of the tree try to maintain osmotic pressure even when there's no rain. And when there's no rain for a period of time, they suck in air. And so what happens is when they suck in too much air, the cells dry up and die. They burst, which is what you're hearing. And when the cells die, they cause the rings on the tree. But what happens, which is really neat, is that when they die, they also the tree exudes some sap, which draws the insects to the tree, which draws the birds to the tree, and so on and so forth. So it's a whole microhabitat created by sound.
So that's fun, right? Yeah, and also just to the everybody here. And the Elizabeth team and everything, it's like, let's take those sounds and that music into the streets, right? That was very African rhythm, even though it was the sound of death, but it was the sound of death and renewal and the sap and then birds coming to the thing. And yeah, it's like, yeah. And then also, you know, imagine a whole group of humans singing, you know, God bless the grass, right? And see, the part of the beauty, you know, working with social action groups, you know, for millennia apparently, it can have been kind of stodgy, you know, like but part of beauty and singing is that it creates more freedom, because even people averse to it don't know for a moment that it's not a performance. Mm. So it gives you time, right? And I was always telling, you know, Code Pink and Medea Benjamin, who has a beautiful singing voice, going, if you sing, they won't beat you over the head with a chair immediately. Right. And she's like, I know that's true, but I just rather be beaten on the head. And it's like, all right, okay, whatever. But again, the bringing the music, and I think to amplify plant songs into public space might be part of our expanding skill. Well, we'll ask the plants. I think it could be a whole part of effective governance. Right? Because things that we'll play with, you know, in the fullness of our luxurious journey together, you know, like I'd like to set up a plant Supreme Court, right? You know, tell the human story and go, plants, what do you think about this? This guy is, you know, stealing all the resources. And they're like, oh, very bad, you know. So do you have plants that you'd like to put on the Supreme Court? It would be a rotational position, of course. We can all think of this. Yes, but I think, you know, that we bring, you know, it's like our mentors, like, you know, Dion Fortune and I love Doris Lessing, you know, but we here now get to add to all of our kind forebears the participatory animism thing. You know, because Doris Lessing, some of it was just really trippy. I read everything from South Africa on to everything where she gets way out there. But, you know, in, I think it's in Shikasta, which is a brilliant novel. But in it, it is determined to have a public global hearing in which the white race is put on trial, not for punishment, for ritual. Right. And it turns out to have been a necessary good thing. And I think, you know, humans put on trial by plants and flora, fauna, fungi, not for punishment, but for here's this story. And they're like, oh, just come on, just anyway. So just putting things out for whatever resonates with people to nominate, like what plant would you like on the Supreme Court, you know, to find plant governance, you know, Department of Future Well-being, Department of Nourishing. We'll just, you know, put that out there for animated, intuitive whimsy as it comes along. I did just also want to say to Elizabeth's chart, part of all of us. Let me see if I can do this here. Yeah, I'm going to bring this back up briefly. Share. All right. Whoops. No, we're going to restore. That's thank you. Thank you, Summer. And just briefly put up Elizabeth for fun, because we have so much kin in our group. But so with Summer, we were looking at Uranus moving from below to above. With Elizabeth, we have Uranus having moved from the right, which is west, the way we draw it, to the east. It's another big threshold thing. And it's like, from everything you've ever studied for the last 42 years into application. I don't know. Do you feel like a leadership thing? Or...
Yeah, I feel like it's coming out more into the vision, visible world, you know, to be seen more. You know, I think that Uranian side of me is coming more to the front and being more visible in the world.
Right. I just wanted to absolutely, you know, honor that wonderful part of you devoted to community service, and Uranus going to be stationing at 23 Taurus, squaring these whole things. So the whole team, I just wanted to bring this up and honor it, and that how connected you are to democracy, 16 Taurus, and then hiding down here, 16 Scorpio at the core of your being, which is woman made fertile by her own spirit. And you are a woman doctor, I mean, about women things. It's so beautiful. You know, it's like, you know, receiving a lot of, you know, ancestral kick butt women, you go girl, you know, absolutely woofiness into precision. So I just wanted to honor that. And we will go back over here. There we go. Okay. And also I'm wearing my pigs with wings, pigs flying earrings for necessary miracles, so we can play with that. Yeah, so singing and then we'll see if you're if you feel like it, Sean, because in the depths of our coexisting fogginess, going, what do you want to do? I don't know. And I was like, do you think with your fantastic hypnagogic guiding voice, you might guide us to, you know, a plant kin? And I forgot what you rejoined, but you changed it around in some way that was even better. But is that something that you feel to do? Or not?
Yeah, I'm feeling into it in the moment because. So what initially I've been trying to figure out which plant would I lead us to journey to together, and then I shifted to, oh, what if we all go into the space where we meet the plant that we're making the agreement with? But I think I'm feeling like that might be something for us to do next time, just mm-hmm. so we have time to really yeah. spend there and to really integrate from there.
Good idea. Yes.
Could I add something here?
Please.
Oh, okay. So my grandparents were on the German side, and my mother was a child during World War II. And so my grandfather, they were just outside of the village up on a small like hill mountain, and the house was built into the hillside. So there was this big courtyard where they had their garden and their rabbits and their chickens. And so for the first part of the war, they were kind of safe up there. But then my grandfather started digging this big hole. And my mother said, what are you doing? And he said, this is going to be for everyone's safety. And he made it big enough so that the whole family, which was her sister and her and her mother and father when he was there, and that the rabbits and the chickens could get down in there too. And he said, this is when the bombs are going to fall. And sure enough, when the Allies started bombing the railroad that was in Bakroitsna, they ran into the hole, and thankfully their house was okay because it was on the edge of town. But to my mother's shock, all of the animals, even the ones that they were holding and covering their ears, they all died. And when they came out of the hole, that half the garden was dead too, even though nothing had bombed them and there was no gas or anything either. And so my grandmother said, what's going on? Why is everything dying? Why are we okay? And my grandfather looked at her very sadly and said, it's because they were cut off from the song. And he said, now you will also notice that the songbirds will be gone, and I think the bats will be too. And that's because all the insects in the air have died, because the sound of the bombing is what killed them. And the fact that they have now been deprived of being able to hear each other, because insects, animals, and plants, they need to hear each other in order to live. And this is a sound that most humans cannot feel or cannot hear. And it will be years before human beings discover this and understand it and be willing to honor it. He said, I don't know how long that will take. So that was a very shocking lesson that my mother had as a little girl.
Yeah. No, and it was unexpectedly shocking at this end, and all the little bunnies and the whatever died. Yeah. I wasn't expecting that. It's like, and we kept them safe. We have a great ally, Michael Stalker, who's a marine sound acoustician, right? And it is our human noise. And he guides us into the ocean, into the Neptunian realms. But the atmosphere that you're referencing, and this is also part of our, I guess, humans on trial, right? But our available apology and willingness to, all that you say, the sounds that we make, and our friend Michael Stalker has a great book called Hear Where We Are, HEAR. But he says in the ocean, and you're talking about everything, it's all acoustic, you know, 10 feet down, it's all audio. And he talked about how the, you know, the blue whales had fantastic music, you know, that travels around the world. And, you know, the other blue whales pick it up and embellish it. And I go, well, when was it best? And he goes, it was really great in the 60s. Right. That was, you know, but our noise level has degraded the exquisite complexity of their music, because it's like they have to just make it simple to communicate. But also the terrible thing, what you're saying, the sonic booming, the exploring for oil with these things, you know, and even the solar, the wind towers, not, you know, he's a good skeptic, and he's often unwelcome at environmental groups, because he goes, those wind towers, you have to make explode to build them, and then they're down and whales dive and break their jaw and that thing. But he says, yeah, it ruptures eardrums, why we have dolphin and whale beaching, and the things that we don't know that just die and sink to the bottom that you're giving voice to, Cornelia. So we have been a very ill-mannered species, sound and light, as part of it. But yeah, so the prayer, our dedication, our humble offering to nature would be right to before, and you can fill in the blank here too. But also spiral technology. We humans know how to make machines that are completely quiet. It's just the uninitiated Mars va-va-voom, get your rocks off, that wants to make these big booms. And with the bombs and stuff, it's probably neither possible nor desirable to make silent bombs, but the engines could be quiet, you know. And and I just, it's a time of people getting back in touch. So I have somebody I haven't talked to in years and years, but who resides on death row in San Quentin, exquisite person, multiple Pisces, Jarvis Masters. And it's like, okay, I think we're going to do radio. But I just always remember years ago talking to him in San Quentin on death row for decades. I said, Jarvis, if you could have anything you wanted, what would you want? He goes, a night of darkness and silence.
Hmm. Yeah.
Right. That was just immediate. Yeah. Like, it's like, whoa, it's so precious. Darkness and silence.
Right.
So we can waft that, you know, offer impossible things, pigs flying, North Carolina becoming democratic, you know, and nights of silence and quiet.
My grandfather, he studied Rudolf Steiner, and so much of his knowledge came from Rudolf Steiner and some of the other greats that lived at that time, Jung and Eckhart, and my grandmother was a great believer in the spirit of nature and fairies, and so the two of them, as you would say, would go to the Black Sea and they would cahoot in nature and they did their own, they would paint there, they would do their own little experiments there. And they would, you know, take my mother out into the ocean and they would have her stare up in the clouds while she floated. And they would say, you know, imagine changing the shape of a cloud. And so I was very, very, very lucky to be a part of this family and learn things that, you know, most people, you know, never would learn firsthand.
And I love the Gary, whatever, the wonderful cartoonist, just as irreverent.
The mouse guy?
Larson.
Gary Larson, thank you. Right, yeah. And he's got the clouds talking to each other, pointing at humans, going, and that one looks like a pig, and that one looks like a water. So he's wonderful reversal. But yeah, no, that's great. And thinking, expanding our ways of participating, as you're suggesting, you know, singing music into public spaces, yeah, music into private spaces. If one, you know, Martin Prechtel does this, and he's just unbelievably prolific. But he says when he's working on a project, he makes a little tiny like he's working on a book. He makes a little tiny book, and he takes it out into nature and leaves it, you know, a tree trunk or under a rock, so that the nature spirits will support the project. And it works for him, funding, publishing, I mean, completing and the thing. And then there's the whole tradition, and feel free to engage and send photos and stuff of what are called spirit catchers, although we could change the word crutcher. But you take, you know, biodegradable material, you know, and you write poems and things, you know, and maybe birch bark and things, but things that will definitely degrade, and you take it out into nature and leave it there, you know, which is also part of, you know, North Carolina and everything kind of a thing, you know, as a wish. It's the realm also of prayer sticks, which I was taught, and then we taught it to delinquent kids with contracts on their lives, and also what were then called politically incorrect retarded kids. They were in the same group, but we taught them how to make prayer sticks, it's a wonderful thing. You find two feathers, you know, and a stick that you like, and you bind the feathers to the stick, green for grandmother growth, right? And then you use other kinds of yarn, and as you're doing it, right, you're putting your prayerful dedication into this meditative kind of dynamic, and then you take it out into nature and you plant it, and the feathers give your prayer wings. It's like pigs with wings. It's a very wonderful thing to do. And when we took it to the delinquent kids who were like 14, 15 with gang contracts on their lives and really exhausted and stuff, but they, after initial resistance, they were really good at it. And they were like, all right, we start with green for grandmother growth, and then for red if we want to be more woofy. And it's like, yeah, yeah, yeah. Or blue if we want to be calmer. Yes, 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 you go. You know, and then we were teaching non-economic forms of power, right? And then they would come back at the end of the week and they go, it worked. You know, I wanted to get on better with my mom. You know, I wanted to be not picked up by the police this week, you know. And it was little humble things, right? And then as they go, well, that worked. And then their desires got unfurled, right? Like for a little more. And it was darling because the tough guy, delinquent bad boys, very lovable, very mythologically gifted. I mean, just completely tapped in, you know. I mean, I've said this before, but I'll say it again, and for us all to honor and bring alive the baddest of the bad boys, and so very lovable. You know, we were guiding them into a trance to find their power animal, you know. The bad guy said, "All right, it's a snake, and it lives 100 miles beneath the surface of the earth." And it was this guy, right? And it sees an eagle flying overhead, and it knows that they were once one thing, and they're separated by a wall that goes up forever and sideways forever, but it can't do both at the same time. So they manage to get around the wall and get back together for the sake of creation. And we're like, wow. Kid had not been reading Jung or Mesoamerican mythology. He'd never been praised for anything. And we were like, oh, that's really great. And he's like, oh. And then we had them paint their thing and then dance their thing over some months. But yeah, I just wanted to bring that in. You know, again, the prayerful offering brought to nature is a way of engagement. Some people show up at marches with music, and that's good. And then some people go to the caves, and some people do both. But it's all humming, you know, and beautifully effective for us to experiment with. So there. Mm-hmm.
And I think walking out on the land where you are and calling things by the holiest names you know them, and speaking the endearments that you know. People ask me about my learning Irish. I often joke, but it's not entirely a joke, that I've gotten very good at the vocative case, which is the case in which you address things. And I've gotten very good at endearments. But when it comes to daily human interaction, not so great. But that's okay, because I can go out and I can call trees by old names and speak endearments to them. And I also have begun making a practice of, I love listening to the very old beings, but there's also something about finding the very young beings. And so there are a couple of very young oak saplings on the land where I live. And I think about, they are going to be here long, long after I'm gone. And so I make a practice of going and telling the young oaks the stories of what happened before and the stories of what's happening now, so that that will be held in their bodies when people go to listen to them a century or two from now.
And that's, I think, a heartening thing that comes to the North Carolina part of our place, which is long-term dedication. The story is told of Charles de Gaulle in his late 80s, I think, and his gardener came to him and said, you know, if we planted these copper beeches in 100 years, it would be fantastic. And de Gaulle said, plant them now.
Right.
Just wonderful. There we go. So so I guess we are planting our garden on literal metaphoric levels, that may that be our rich theme, you know, and preparing, you know, for tranciness. You know, it's a good what you said, Sean, is great too, finding the right moment for kind of a guided trance thing. And you know, right now Mars in the sky is overhead at 27 degrees of Cancer, exactly trining Neptune at 27 degrees of Pisces. So free range, you know, off on our own, you know, it's like in a fairy tale. You want to put the desirable thing, the wish, the dedication on the work table and pulse it, you know, touch it and then leave it. Right. Because if we stay there, it can't move. Right. So it's like, pulse it and then go take a walk and sing to a tree and then do the thing and pulse it. Right. So the elves and the nature spirits can rearrange things as we put the impossible, desirable mystery on the altar. Right. So it's like, so it's pulsing as opposed to staying there. That thing. And then, yes, how we play and how we. Pluto squaring Jupiter, right? The stories. Well, for us to think this week, you know, what are stories in our own lives and in the culture lives that we would really like to no longer animate? I think that's right. That we just go, it's pow, the great Hawaiian term, meaning burnt ashes, just finished, right? It's like the ashes in a pipe or the ashes in a fire, just pow. What's pow? And I was talking to young activists a ways back who were talking about Standing Rock and Indigenous thing and going, it's the same people getting arrested over and over again and doing the thing, you know, and we are all burnt out. And I wanted to, I fortunately stopped myself from wanting to change the metaphor going, no, some jolly rabbit thing. No. It's like, no, burnt out is actually good. Pow. Finished the realm of participatory activism without participatory animism, it'll kill you, right? And may it be pow, and now comes this, and that's what we didn't have in 1940, the last Jupiter-Uranus time, but we really do have now. Does that hum in accord with yourself, Sean?
It does. It's so interesting that, you know, we've had this 500-year detour into mechanistic rationalism, and now the very smartest mechanistic rationalists are using mechanistic rationalist methods to prove animism and no longer be able to walk away from it.
Right. Okay. perhaps you will say more next week on this useful thing. It's like... three decades ago, you know, leading edge physics was saying there's meaning in patterns. We go, excellent. The argument is over between astrology and astronomy, between physics and metaphysics, meaning in patterns. There we go, team. Yeah, we're all right. So yes, that's super great. And then if anybody wants to say anything before we deconvene with our wonderful song about planting and our well wishing for ourselves, you know, and our kin, you know, I mean, Mars in Cancer, trine Neptune, is our spirit kin, our dream kin, our ocean kin, you know, our declaration of availability. I say so many things over and over again. I want to say them in a way that's fresh and also just to change them too. But how I usually, we have the Uranus quintile Saturn, how I usually express Uranus, saying Uranus says, we are big beings, trickster beings from all traditions. We don't care what you humans do. We care the manner in which you do it, that it come from freedom and choice as opposed to fear. It's like, okay. I like that. And then the way I have given voice to Uranus is Uranus says to all of us, you know, I'm going to connect each. Where would you like genius? Where would you like genius? Where would you like genius? Summer Star, you know, Elizabeth Moitka, Sean, Cornelia, I mean, everybody, Meredith, Ann, where would you like genius? And I love Terry Pratchett, great Taurus animus, saying genius is always sleeting through the universe until it finds a receptive molecule. And it's like Shakespeare. So we want to be receptive. And Uranus says, where would you like genius? You know, and Neptune says, we just want you to wonder. And Uranus says, I'm going to connect each one of you to the coolest thing possible, inwardly and outwardly. And all I want from you guys and Gaias, you know, is a gesture of willingness, going, hey, we're willing. You know, and Uranus goes, they've hoisted their sails, or a few of them have. We've hoisted our sails, right? Let's send the wind. You know, the wind in the branches, and then we're going to go to the deep garden place in our outro song. Anything you want to chime or encourage or say before we play a beautiful outro song, Sean, or anybody but Sean?
I just want to summon in two more streams of support for North Carolina. And one of those is from the mountains themselves, that the Appalachians are the oldest mountains in the world. And in the Irish and Scottish tradition, which speak of the same mountains on the other side of the ocean, right, we know that they are the mountains that were called up out of the water by the Kayach, the Veiled One, with her blackthorn staff. And so calling her presence and calling the presence of those mountains and their strength for all who need it. And then I think about the amazing traditions of Cherokee women and African women and Scottish women and Irish women up in those hills of Appalachia, keeping old ways alive, and especially the midwives and the wise women among them. And may they be present, speaking to, I imagine, a lot of the legislature is made up of their grandchildren and great-grandchildren and great-grandchildren. So may those grandmothers and great-grandmothers speak to their descendants and open their hearts.
Beautiful.
Sean, can I ask, when you say to bring in the plants, I have often used plants more sort of in a tincture form for a symptom or for a situation for a person, but in this case, when we're trying to use it energetically or in a Uranian way, like, how would you use black cohosh, just like ask just to talk to the plant energetically, or like Carolyn brought the plant into her house and is sitting there with it like a live plant, or like, I wasn't sure whether to go to the nursery or to go get some black cohosh off my shelf here. I just wondered what you meant when you said bring black cohosh in, if you would just take 1 minute to elaborate a little.
Absolutely. And I would say, in whatever way black cohosh makes herself available. So if you have the tincture on your shelf, you can take the tincture down and you can take a single drop of the tincture. And then you can also make a little provisional altar by having a bowl of water and putting a single drop of the tincture into that water and asking it to be carried out into the world. But certainly going to the nursery and getting a plant and finding an appropriate wildish or on the way back to being wild place to plant it would be a very good way of making a relationship and making an agreement with that plant, especially because that plant is endangered. And so helping to propagate that plant in the right places is a beautiful way to form a longer alliance. But, you know, sometimes in a pinch, you can just sit with a picture of the plant and call on that presence. And if you've been in the physical presence of the plant before, that's better because you can call that in as you sit with a picture. If you've felt the plant in your body before, you can call up that feeling. But even if you haven't, you can just be with a picture and call to that being.
Thank you. That's really beautiful. I appreciate that.
And then even more, well, not even more, supplementary fun that you're catalyzing. Map magic is very fun. You can have a little model of the North Carolina State House, right? Mm-hmm. And you can tincture things. We did this in our election magic. Oh, you were part of our election magic council, Elizabeth. That's right. I found it quite effective, you know, making little, you know, you can put the picture of the plant or the plant itself or the drop or whatever with the intention, you know, inviting the plant, you know, may you alert the hearts of all those here, whatever Jupiter blessing you want to put, you know, Jupiter blessings are eager to be incarnated as actuality. So your mojo, right? So yes, and little trails of cornmeal to protect things. And anyway, it's fun and effective. All right, team, that's great. Thank you so much, Sean, for being co-wizard, and all of us planting garden. And we get to sail out with this wonderful song we've heard once before, but it's so perfect for right now and for the new moon on Friday, this dark of the moon, where we're determining the course of culture. Pretty good team. So here come the Bengtsons and the garden.
Woke up this morning and there was food on my plate. Celebrate, celebrate. And everything on that plate was there because it grew. Hallelujah, hallelujah. And everything that grew had to first be planted in the dark, a little spark. And everything that was planted in the dark had to first be imagined in the dark. And everything imagined in the dark had to first be imagined by someone. Oh, someone who remembered that the future is the garden of the past. Someone who remembered there was a hunger and it was coming and coming fast. Someone who was willing to go down into their dark with roots and seeds for a future they would never see. For a future they would never see. Was it you? Was it you? Or was it you who remembered what to do? I think it was you. I'm pretty sure it was you, honey. I think it was you who knew what to do. Come on, hey, you know I woke up this morning and well there was food on my plate. Thank you, I'm gonna celebrate. Let's celebrate. Yeah, and everything on that plate was there because it grew. Hallelujah. Hallelujah, yes. And everything that grew was planted in the darkness. And everything that was planted in the dark had to first be imagined in the dark, like a spark of the mind or of the heart. And everything imagined in the dark, oh, it has to be imagined by someone. Oh, someone who remembers that the future is the garden of the past. Someone who remembers that the future is coming, and it's coming fast. Oh, she's coming fast, you know. Oh, someone who said yes, I'll go down into the darkness with only roots and a handful of seeds, and plant a future I will never see. I'm gonna plant a future I will never see. You know, I think it was you. It was you, wasn't it? I think it was you. I think it was you who remembered what to do. I think it was you. Yeah, I think it was you, yeah. I think it was you, beloved. I think you know what to do. And honey, oh honey, I'm gonna meet you in the garden. I wanna meet you in the garden.